Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 1, text number? You told me yesterday 27, is that right? Kachit Kurunam Paramaha Suhrit Naha Bhamaha Saha Aste Sukham Anga Shaurihi Yaha Vai Svasrinam Pitrivat Dadati Varan Vadanyaha Vara Tarparnena Kachit Kurunang Paramasurino Bhama Saaste Sukham Anga Shaurihi. Yo Vai Svasrinam Pitrivad Dadati Varan Vadanyo Varatarapanena Kachit Kurunam Parama Suhrinno Bhama Saaste Sukham Anga Shaurihi Yo Vai Svasrinam Pitrivad Dadati Varan Vadanyo Varatarapanena
Srinam Pitruvat Dadati
Srinam Pitruvat Dadati
Varan Vadanyo Varatarpanena
Varan Vadanyo Varatarpanena
Kachit Kurunam Paramasurino
Kachit Kurunam Paramasurino
Bhamasa Ase Sukhamanga Shaurihi
Bhamasa Ase Sukhamanga Shaurihi
Ladies.
Bhava sa ase sukha manga shauri
Yo vai swasrinam Yo vai sasrinam pitravadadati.
Kachit weather. Kurunam of the Kurus. Paramaha, greatest. Suhrit, well-wisher. Naha, our. Bhama, brother-in-law. Saha, he. Aste, is. Sukham, happy. Anga, O Uddhava. Shaurihi, Vasudeva. Yaha, one who. Thy, certainly. Svasrinam, of the sisters. Pitrivat, like a father. Dadati, gives. Varan, everything desirable. Badanyaha, munificent. Vara, wife. Taraparnena, by pleasing. Translation. Please tell me whether the best friend of the Kurus, our brother-in-law, Vasudeva, is doing well. He is very munificent. He is like a father to his sisters, and he is always pleasing to his wives. Purport. Lord Krishna's father, Vasudeva, had 16 wives, and one of them, named Pauravi or Rohini, the mother of Baladev, was the sister of Vidura. Vasudeva, therefore, was the husband of Vidura's sister, and thus they were brothers-in-law. Vasudeva's sister, Kunti, was the wife of Pandu, Vidura's elder brother, and in that sense also, Vasudeva was brother-in-law to Vidura. Kunti was younger than Vasudeva, and it was the duty of the elder brother to treat younger sisters as daughters. Whenever anything was needed by Kunti, it was munificently delivered by Vasudeva due to his great love for his younger sister. Vasudeva never dissatisfied his wives, and at the same time he supplied the objects desired by his sister. He had special attention for Kunti because she became a widow at an early age. While inquiring about Vasudeva's welfare, Vidura remembered all about him and the family relationship. Om Jnanatimirandhasya Jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurinmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Nama Srishtam Vanumapi Shachiputram Atra Swarupam Rupam Tasyagra Jamurupuring Maturim Goshtavartim Radha Kundam Girivaramaho Radhika Madhavasham Prapto Yasya Pratita Kripaya Shri Gurum Tamnatosmi Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Atav Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagarna Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha Guru Vaishnav Bhagavan Tina Smarane Hoi Vigna Vinashan Anaya Shri Hoi Nijavan Chita Puran Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vidura had left home. Generally one leaves home to become free from attachment, at least in Vedic culture, to become free from family attachment. But we can see that Vidura is very much concerned about all the family members. Vidura didn't specifically leave home to become free from family attachment. More on the positive side, to visit the holy places, connected with Krishna, and on the negative side, to get away from Duryodhana, out of his mercy upon Duryodhana, so that Duryodhana didn't have the opportunity to insult him further and in this way make more offenses. Some impersonalists, they denigrate the Bhagavatam. It's all stories, and stories means relationships. There's no story if there's no relationship. You don't make a movie about two people just looking at each other and they never say anything or do anything. There has to be some activity, some discussion, and then activities, and then relationships have formed and sustained and broken based on activities and how we respond to them. So the Bhagavatam is all about relationships, and the Bhagavad Gita also, for that matter, started with Arjuna in an existential crisis such as he'd never imagined in his life before. I have these relationships and I'm going to act in a manner which is contrary to these relationships. Or in the case of his relationships with the Kauravas, they hadn't been good ever since their childhood, but he's still thinking how we could maybe make it up. Why can't we all get along? Because that is the way of dharma, that one is supposed to, it's not just dharma, but it's there in human society, it's expected in human society that one will be affectionate to family members. That is breaking down more and more as families become redefined, what the very meaning of a family and what the basis of family life is. And what is the very meaning of it? Yeah, what is the very meaning of a family? And as society becomes more and more impersonal and people become more and more selfish. But the impersonalists will denigrate this, and they preferred the Upanishads, where it's jnana, just knowledge, which in their estimation means simply understanding that all relationships are causes of suffering. They want to negate all relationships. However, in the Bhagavatam, we find, along with descriptions of Bhagavan, Bhagavata means in relation to Bhagavan, so the Bhagavatam is the scripture particularly in relation to Bhagavan, and the Bhagavatas, they are the devotees. It's Ek Bhagavata Baro, Bhagavata Shastra, Ar Bhagavat, Bhakta Bhakti Rasa Patra. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes there are two kinds of Bhagavats. One, the big one, or the main one, is the book Bhagavat. And the other one is the devotee who is the receptacle of Bhakti Rasa. So the devotees, they don't avoid relationships or try to cut off relationships, but they understand relationships in relation to Krishna. There was a popular song in the 1960s, which I heard again and again and again, because my sisters, two elder sisters in the next room, who didn't have much relationship with at all, or my younger sisters for that matter, they would play it again and again. You probably know this. You need someone to love. You got to find someone to love. You know that also? Still lives on. That is human society. Some people go away out of frustration. They become recluses. Or they may be going away to search for God. But generally in human society, you see, you need someone to love. And you also need someone to hate. That seems to be part of human life. Love in the material world means you hate others. As I was growing up in merry old England in this lifetime, it's not part of the school syllabus, but you learn to hate French people. And we never saw any French people, but anyway, we're not supposed to like them. And have all kinds of slang terms, derogatory terms for French people, Italian people, also we never saw an Italian, blacks, Pakistanis, they weren't liked at all, and so on. So if you're part of one group, then you hate another group. You identify with one group. We're working class. We don't like those snooty upper class people. And these snooty upper class people are snooty, which means they look down on the plebs, which word we didn't know, and so on. So love means you identify with one group and you don't like another group. That's love in the material world, and is nonsense, because we're only in a body for a short time, and we're all part and parcel of Krishna, so why should we hate anyone? The impersonalists miss this. They think we're all Brahman, so we shouldn't have any relationship with anyone. But the Vaishnavas, they see we're all spirit souls, part and parcel of Krishna, so we should love everyone. But at the same time, in Vedic culture, it regulates who we should love, which might seem very strange to the Western mentality. You find out who you love, right? You choose your friends, you choose your life partner. You might still be looking at the age of 70 for your life partner, having been through 3 or 4 tries so far. You were just telling me. Amazing foolishness. But the Vedic culture, it regulates who we should love and to what degree. Your elder, here we find in the text here, that the elder brother is like a father to his sisters, and there's a relationship of love there, which is, it's not just sending text messages. Actually, not sending text messages at all, but protecting as far as possible. Vasudeva wasn't able to protect anyone, except he protected his wife by his diplomacy. Otherwise, before Kamsa, he wasn't able to protect his children or anyone else. Kamsa was so powerful. giving gifts, and the reciprocation is there. That's there in Indian culture up to the present day. There's the one day when the sisters, they come and tie the raksha bandhana. They tie a string on the brother's wrist. What else do they do? They cook for them or something, and then there's also Yama Dvitiya, which is much celebrated in Mathura, that's also something similar. I can't remember. It's because Yama and Yami, which means Yamaraj, and Yami means Yamuna, his sister. So it's something, I can't remember exactly what they do. They go to the Yamuna and then they do something which saves the brother from going to Yamaraj. I can't remember exactly. But it's regulated like that. And it's clear, just like, for instance, if the girl gets married and then her husband dies young when she has no children or very young children, then she goes back to her father's house. Now, the father's house isn't there. Then she goes to live with her elder brother, and you have to have enough children to do all of this. And the elder brother is treated just like a father, and he has to behave like that to his younger brothers. We see that Ram, Lakshman, Bharat, and Shadrughna, they were born very close to each other, but still, Rama was treated as the order giver, just like the father among the other brothers, and even among the demons. We see Hiranyaksha, he was physically born before Hiranyakashipu, but that means he's the begotten a second or two later. So he's the younger brother, and he was on the behest of Hiranyakashipu. He was going all over the universe and causing havoc as to please his elder brother, because they're demons. And we see again in Ram Leela, we see that the brothers of Ravana, they knew he was off. Those who were still alive, because the first one got killed, right? Before Ravana had even heard of Rama. But then Kumbhakarna, he also understood, look, this is nonsense. Just give Sita back. But anyway, Ravana said, no, you go and fight. Go and fight. So he did. He said, anyway, I'm going to... He went out, yes, I'll kill. But he knew he was going to get killed. But still he had to do his duty to his brother. And of course, very famously, Vibhishana, half-brother of Ravana, that became his dharma sankat. Should I stay with a brother who's so evil, or should I serve him? Should I go on serving him? And he decided, no, I'll go and join Rama, which was a really very heavy thing to do if we consider in Vedic culture. And Arjuna, similar situation. I have to follow what Yudhishthira wants and what Krishna wants, but how can I go against Bhishma and Drona? How did I get in this situation? Everyone else was in the same situation. In the Mahabharata, well, we had the same thing, that Vikarna was actually a great... well, he knew. He was the only one who... one of the sons of Dhritarashtra. He was the only one who spoke up in the Asat Sabha when Draupadi was being insulted. And he spoke up and said, this is wrong. But he still fought on the side of Duryodhana. And Bhima, he promised to kill all the sons of Dhritarashtra. And he did, one by one, wiping them out. But after killing Vikarna, he circumambulated him in respect and then went back and with the fighting like that. One he didn't kill. Yuyutsu, because before the battle, Yudhishthira said, if anyone wants to join our side, come and join. And one came, who was the half-brother of Duryodhana. So that was, Yuyutsu was considered a traitor. Vibhishana was considered a traitor. But they chose on the side of dharma. It's dharma to follow your elder brother. But if you see they're doing such bad activities, should you still follow them? And that's a great moral question throughout history and all civilizations. Should you support someone who's doing wrong just because you're they're your friend, or they've done so much for you in the past? Should you turn them in? Should you support a father in old age? You're supposed to support your parents in old age. Should you do so if he's been evil all his life? You've seen that. So these questions arise. And we have Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, the Puranas, to give narrations which we can draw lessons from. And human life is complex, can be very complex. Even with all the rules of dharma regulating how people are to behave, you can't imagine every situation that will arise. And so when a question comes up and you can't, it's hard to say what to do, then the elders, the brahmanas, they're to be consulted what to do in this circumstance. And then they may cite, well, there's this from Mahabharata, oh, there's this from Bhagavatam, and it's a similar situation. So it the Shastra acts as a guide for practical action. So he's saying about relationships that your love is directed toward certain persons and not toward others. That's there in human society. Although the best attitude is Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, to see everyone as your family member. But in practical dealings, you have to be with certain persons more than others. If you're living in a family, you have to act cooperatively for the benefit of that family, and you can't act for the benefit of another family in another village. You can't act in this, just like something very simple, washing the pots. You may have the duty to do that if you're in a poor family, because families a little higher, they have servants to do that. So, okay, that's your duty to do that. And you do that, and that contributes to the family's ongoing welfare. You can't go and wash the pots in every house. So we're with specific people, we're brought together, and we may be sent, well, especially the young girls are sent. Now you have to marry. You go there and marry. And they adjust. They have to adjust. There was an American anthropologist in India. I read her book, trying to understand, or just documenting life in a North Indian village. So she was going, especially seeing all the women, because mostly anthropologists are women and feminists. So she asked all the women, "Do you love your husband?" And many of them couldn't understand the question, what it even meant. What do you mean? It's like something like, "Do you breathe air?" And then some of them said yes, and then when she asked why, they found that also very difficult to answer. And one of them came up with the answer, "Because he's my husband." That's the answer. That's what you do. It's And love is, because the Western idea of love is something out of a movie, which has no parallel in real life, or something out of a, was that Walt Disney, Cinderella? Oh, it's not originally Cinderella. Was it Cinderella? Or there are so many of them. Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. So they're not originally Walt Disney, but it's originally from some Western folklore or something like that. Some idea, and then they all lived happily ever after. Sure. So this bizarre idea that you just my soulmate, my partner, the one is meant for me, and all this, but it's all based on. What it comes down to is this person fulfills my sense gratification and I'll reciprocate with that. And it is there, we see that Vasudev was fulfilling the needs of his sisters. But he did that, of course, expecting reciprocation, but dharma means when we come above the level of just doing it because it's for dharma, then we come to nishkam karma, where we do it without expectation of return, either in this world or the next. There's so many narrations in Shastra of those who performed righteous activities just because that's what you're supposed to, for the sake of dharma. Yudhishthira, when one time Draupadi was needling him, that what's the use of your dharma? Look what happened to us. You lost everything. We're humiliated. And Yudhishthira said, well, I don't perform dharma for the sake of what the result will be, but just because it's dharma, you have to follow. And the ultimate test came when at the end, they all passed away, and Yudhishthira was the last. And then he saw Shakuni and Duryodhana in heaven and his own brothers in hell. That's the mind that's narrated in Mahabharata. And then he couldn't understand it. Should be round the other way, although if Duryodhana died as a kshatriya on the battlefield, then maybe he should have gone to heaven anyway. But then Yudhishthira decided, okay, my brothers are here, I'll go with them. And that was the final test. It was an illusion. You know, the Mayavadis, they want to negate all relationships. And we, in the material world, we try to develop relationships to get act in a way that love, the love that we all seek, is generated. But relationships in this world always cause pain. Therefore, one should be free. Get free from all these things. Get free from worldly relationships. So why is Vidur talking about all, he wants to learn about all his relations. They're all in relation to Krishna. The central object of love is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada writes that in the preface to the Nectar of Devotion. The Nectar of Devotion, or the Krishna Conscious Movement, teaches that the central, everyone is looking for love. There's a very good essay or a mini essay on love in the opening of the Nectar of Devotion. And the book, the whole book is about love. It's about bhakti. Bhakti rasa. Bhakti means love, bhakti rasa means love, bhakti rasa, amrita means love. So it's a big ocean of love, all based on relationships and the different ways they're exchanged and how to develop that at the beginning, why we should develop it. Srila Prabhupada gives a little essay on, contained within his introduction, on love, and he says that the Krishna Conscious Movement is based on the principle that the central object of love is Krishna. So Krishna is the central object of love, but it doesn't mean only Krishna. If, of course, there's nothing different from Krishna in one sense, but if we only look for Krishna, we remain a neophyte devotee. That is described in the Bhagavatam, Acharya meva haraye pujaya shradhayate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakrita smritaha. A devotee is on the material platform. Even if he worships Krishna with great faith, but he doesn't offer similar respect or doesn't recognize the devotees of Krishna or others. So one has to make friendship with devotees also, serve the devotees and act in relationship with the devotees. And the Mayavadis can't imagine this. They just want to get free from all relationships. But Vaikuntha means the place where there's relationship with love only and no pain. In this world, love means pain. It's concomitant, and pain is more than love. But still that little tiny bit of love is so enticing that everyone goes on searching for it, despite the pain. They keep on looking, 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 looking. Where is that? They look for it in sense gratification, but they can't find it. It's not there. So we have here discussion of Vasudeva was like a father to his sisters, always pleasing to his wives. They didn't give up on him, even though he was not able to properly protect them. With his one wife, he was in prison, and the others were scattered. Pauravi, Rohini, was in the care of Vasudev's half-brother, Nanda Maharaj. But still, they accepted, this is our condition. They didn't become discontent. Of course, not very happy with the circumstances due to the atrocities of Kamsa, but they didn't become discontent or blame Vasudev, understanding that he's doing the best he can in his situation. He's not acting against dharma. Even though he did ultimately mislead Kamsa by taking his eighth son and pretending, misleading Kamsa. But that is acceptable in a time of great need, and especially in relationship to Krishna, that becomes transcendental. Otherwise, this relationships between family members, if it's not with Krishna in the center, then it's just Maya, that's all. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, who says in one of his songs that he's recalling his life, that he's talking about his youth. Dharma smarya grihini kor tokona grahila mami, something like that. Says, as a young man considering dharma, he married, he accepted a wife, because normally that would be arranged, but his immediate family members were all dead due to some epidemic. So many died. So he thought, yes, I should marry. He had many children. But then, in another song, also in the Sharanagati series, this is bhaktir bahimok nija jane mane par jani par. My own family members, if they're inimical to Krishna consciousness, I think of them as outsiders. Two of his sons made bhakti the central focus of their lives. We don't know about other sons. At least one of his daughters was very close to and very supportive of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur also, he didn't, well, as a sannyasi especially, he didn't cultivate relationships with his family, means his brothers and sisters on the material platform, although he did make a samadhi for Bhaktivinod Thakur and for his own mother, seeing her as a pure devotee. So he made a facility for worshipping her. Her body must have been burned. We don't have any information, nor do we have, I don't believe that there's no grounds for burying the body of a woman. For sannyasi, if they are, sannyasi or a great saintly person, their body may be buried, at least in general Vedic culture, although we do see in some parts of India, it's becoming increasingly common burials, mostly because people can't afford it, it seems. You just dig a hole and throw it in. It's cheaper than going through the whole procedures, and the wood can be very expensive, and so on, so on, so on, so on. Kunti Devi prayed, Sneha Pasha Vimang Chindi Jada Pandushu Vrishnishu. She's praying to Krishna, cut this strong bond of attachment that I have, both from my own sons and from my father's family members on two sides. The women have family on two sides. And the man also, he has his mother's side, but the father's side is taken very seriously. Not the mother's side, not taken in terms of obligation. Well, why should she pray like that when they're all pure devotees? What do you think? Any thoughts about that? To set an example? Yeah, he's saying the same thing. Anyone else? Any suggestions? Why should she say like that?
That would all go to deterioration very soon.
Lord Krishna would leave the world soon. Is that what you said?
A few verses before that, she says that Krishna was supporting everything. Because of him, everything was flourishing.
Now that Krishna is leaving Dwaraka, leaving for Dwaraka, everything will deteriorate. But I don't see how that's connected with...
Affection was a bit mixed and she wanted to be completely...
She felt that maybe that affection was a bit mixed and she wanted to be clearly completely on the spiritual platform. Yeah. You were going to say the same thing. I was thinking that also, yeah. Which is set an example because her consciousness is completely pure, that we know, we can see from her prayers to Krishna, beautiful prayers. But it's setting an example also because we here, as aspiring devotees, we have relationships with devotees, but it may be mixed also, and with family members, that also overlaps on the question that came up yesterday about talking only about Krishna. Is it all right to talk about other things? And we give the example of in management, you have to talk about accounts, and maybe you're talking about computers because you need to get your computer working so you can do your service. But it can overlap, that's the word you use, right? And it can go too far where you're so much concerned with computers or management, and or we may relate with devotees for service, but it can deteriorate slightly or more than slightly. It's so easy to get off track. For instance, you may be discussing with someone how to cook such and such preparation for Krishna, and that devotee may say, yeah, well, so-and-so taught me to do it like this. You say, oh, so-and-so, I didn't see him for a long time. Yeah, actually, he's in Maya now. And then you just blah, 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 start talking about how he's in Maya, and this. It's so easy. Maya is very expert in dragging us away from Krishna. Okay, that's just a few points I thought I wanted to make. Hare Krishna, much more could be said, as always. Any question? Comment? You have, you're the elder here, right?
Yeah,
so we all have to defer to you.
So,
but if you start attacking us with arrows in battle, then we'll have to see what to do. So not very likely.
So in Krishna consciousness, right from the very beginning, we're kind of taught that mundane love is not where it's at. We're, you know, encouraged to turn our back on that. It's temporary.
Callous. Srila Prabhupada often used the word callous. We should be callous to bodily relationships.
Callous, right. It's temporary.
It's a heavy word.
It's illusory. But
it means no feeling, nothing.
As you were saying during the class, and you sort of like acknowledged it, it's some the validity of that song that your sisters used to play. You got to find somebody to love. You need somebody to love.
Their idea of love is you smoke some marijuana and have it off in Golden Gate Park.
You know, we turn our back. We're callous towards that. We turn our back off from that, and you supported that by quoting from the Nectar of Devotion, where Prabhupada says, you know, it's the central point is love. It's, you know. So, but we're taught by Rupa Goswami that there's different stages of devotional service, and the final stage is after 9, or some acharyas, according to Mukunda Das, say 14, is prema. So in the beginning, we're turning our back, we're, you know, becoming callous towards the mundane so-called love, but it's what we're, you know, but we don't. There's a long stretch there before we actually get to the real thing. So, what are you supposed to do in the meantime?
What do we do in the meantime when we're neither here nor there? We're in Trishanku situation. We're neither up nor are we down. Cultivate relationships with devotees. That's what we should do. We're not at the stage of prem, but we should cultivate relationships with devotees. You mean serving together? Then,
Guru Maharaj, this attitude of performing one's duty, even in devotional service, for the sake of the duty itself in devotional service, for the sake of the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. The neophyte, like myself, tends to want to look for perks or let's say like appreciation to say, okay, yes, I am pleasing. But oftentimes we reach a stage in devotional service where we're just expected to go on, where you will not get that kind of reciprocation all the time, but you're still expected to go on. At that time, one starts to feel feel rather disturbed sometimes because you don't know if you're actually pleasing, or sometimes you have doubts or things like this. And how do we reach that stage where we don't expect that appreciation? We just do it knowing that it pleases them, but not that we actually expect a result from doing so.
Yeah, Srila Prabhupada often used the word duty. I have to do my duty. And that's what vaidhi bhakti means. It's a rule. Vidhi means you have to do it. That's all. And we learn from Gita, we have to hear again and again, that labha labhau jaya jayo. Whether we gain or lose, whether we win or lose, we have to do our duty. Srila Prabhupada, he couldn't, he was trying to instill them in his early disciples, he had to deal with them practically totally on the affective or emotional platform. He couldn't just come in and say, okay, now all of you do this, you should do it because Rupa Goswami said. He had to attract them to do that. Even he made disciples, they had no idea what it meant to be a disciple. So that is the standard one should do, just on order, by duty. And we're neophyte, so we need some affection and encouragement, and that's also there. It's not just rules. As in one place in the Bhagavad Gita purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about following discipline just like in the military. But then elsewhere he said we shouldn't be like the military, that just you have orders and you do what you do. But naturally there should be some exchange of affection. It's just like I was saying that the brothers were serving Rama. They did out of duty. But there was a strong exchange of affection also. So what was that? How do we develop that? Well, how do we develop anything? We just go on with the process. But I do feel that because in the Western world there's no sense of dharma, and in India decreasingly so, that we are emphasizing more and more within this movement on affection, relationships, as the basis. But the basis should be that I'm a servant of Krishna and I have to do what Krishna wants. That should be the basis. And then the affection comes. But if you put the affection first, and then you without proper understanding of what it means anyway, it becomes very mundane, and then you see the guru smiles at you, and a nice Tamil president is someone who lets me do whatever I like. Where did I read that? There's someone saying he was in the army training, and he was always bickering with the sergeant, and the sergeant was really heavy with him in training. He didn't like it at all. And then they got the notice that in a few weeks you're being sent to the front to fight. Then he realized, whoops, wait a minute, I need that training. And then his attitude changed. He understood what the sergeant was teaching was for his own benefit. He was being really heavy with him. Don't be careful with that gun, and you have to hold it like this, you have to polish it, whatever. You have to follow the discipline, because we're all in the army unit, you're all together. You all have to, if you don't follow the discipline, you're all going to get destroyed immediately. You have to, the discipline helps each one to help each other. So there's an analogy there. And also in this very selfish age, everyone's always thinking of themselves and their own benefit, but the concept of the self in more traditional cultures, and definitely in Vedic cultures, is that we are part of a group, and we have to think of the group benefit first, rather than what I might see as my own individual benefit. You're going to ask something? Mataji, is anyone? No. And on top, when we come to the spiritual sphere, Bhagavad Gita, and especially devotional sphere, then we have to see not only in terms of worldly dharma, what's the actual basis of dharma, see ourselves as eternal beings, and what we do has an effect on our own future. And while acting within this world according to the rules of this world, we have to remember we have nothing to do with this world. And we have to act for our eternal benefit.
Guru Maharaj, we can even see in your own life there was a point of time where, you know, some leaders of the movement were promoting a particular person, you know, to be like, you know, very elevated and, you know,
11, to be precise.
Not just that much, but someone outside of.
Oh, I see. And then after the 11, then they found someone else.
Yeah, and
outside.
And you know, you stood up to it, Maharaj, and like, you know, you in some lectures you're saying you spoke. What was the etiquette that you followed?
It's Maharaj? A difficult one, because Srila Prabhupada, he wanted us all to cooperate. That was a very strong point. But on the other hand, when you see things that are definitely what you see as being definitely what Prabhupada didn't want, and then where do we cooperate? It becomes, again, similar situation to Arjuna. Should I fight or should I just cooperate? So it becomes a very difficult situation, doesn't it? We get blamed for not cooperating, but then should we cooperate in going against what Prabhupada wanted and say, no, this is what Prabhupada wanted. This is really what Prabhupada wanted. And there may be different opinions about what he wanted.
So, Maharaj, what was the etiquette that you followed in disagreeing with your seniors?
At that time?
Yes, Maharaj.
I gave a letter to my GBC member and said, if you want, you can give it to the GBC. They gave it. That was it. That's all I did. It's history now.
Maharaj, you're speaking about relationships, and that's like a big part of just being in the Brahmacharya Ashram, having those deep relationship with the devotees. But often, it's like, at least as years go on, it's like you, those close devotees, even that sometimes that brought you in, they sometimes fall out, or the friends that you've been with also fall out. Is that kind of what we lack? Is that like that you talked about duty as like our basis?
Yeah. The Pandavas stuck together. The Kauravas stuck together. In this modern life, no one sticks together. One devotee was telling me he was thinking of moving to where his daughter just, he's, well, you know who he is. He's from North Carolina, and his daughter just got married in New Jersey. He's thinking, well, I was thinking of moving to be close to my daughter. Yeah, why you want to move? The American life, they'll move also. Everyone's always moving here and there. Stable relationships, it's very poor. People don't trust anyone. They don't. There's no trust and there's no love. Basis of love is trust. People are just living in some dreamland, aren't they? They're watching some star on some screen and imagining. The star who doesn't know them, not interested in them, and they're just, and the star of today will be forgotten tomorrow. I was surprised you knew about that song, right? That's from Jefferson Airplane. But in 100 years, I suppose, no one will know about that. I'm surprised anyone still knows about that. I know so many songs because I used to hear them again and again and again. And simple, catchy lyrics that you don't forget, so. Deeply embedded in my contaminated consciousness. Okay, Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Hare Krishna.